Second Kings chapter 5. Second Kings 5. We're awfully quiet tonight. Who are we missing that's normally talking? Wow. It's the time change. It's just like, Pastor, please, let's go home. It's bedtime. All right, everybody got some notes that need some notes? Thank you. All right, while we're seated, can I have your attention for a moment? This is not something I probably have rarely ever talked about it. As most of you know, I'm doing a series on Sunday nights. Have you all figured that out? Minor characters all over the Bible, major impact. Well, there's a lot of people that I would like to talk about, and I started researching and thinking about this story. By the way, this story is a beautiful story. Now, here's the thing you're going to run into if you actually read the story. One author said there's 10 different characters in this story, and I'm thinking he's off by about 5 or 6. Now, the main person in the story is Naaman. Naaman is a military leader of a kingdom north of Israel. In the King James, it calls it Syria. Some of them will call it other names. It's Aram, which is where we get Aramaic from in Hebrew. Doesn't make any difference. You don't know where it's at anyhow, except modern Syria. Here's my point. There are two main characters in the story. One never shows up. He is omnipresent in the story. God. But he never really does anything directly. But God is, the whole story is about God and this guy named Naaman that gets healed and gets saved. That's one kind of character. They call these round characters. They're characters not round like I am round. Round meaning multidimensional characters. Naaman is one of the, there's only probably 2 or 3 multidimensional characters. Secondly, there's one-dimensional characters. There's several in the story. They're only known for one little thing. And then there's 4, 5, or 6, or 7 what's called flat characters. People that are part of the story, but we know nothing about them. We don't know anything about Naaman's wife. She's mentioned. We don't know anything about Naaman's military. They're mentioned. So you have multiple kinds of characters. If you go home and try to read this whole chapter and find out how many, somebody said 10, I counted like 14, and that was leaving 2 or 3 out that are totally flat. Okay, flat characters, one-dimensional, multidimensional, and God is omnipresent. He's every place. Let's stand. We're not going to read the whole story. And by the way, just so you know, this whole sermon came from this. I wanted to talk about this young lady, this young girl. That grabbed my attention. She, by the way, you talk about a minor character. She is as minor as a character can be. This thing is not functioning, Tom. No, I had it on. Still not functioning. Krusty? Now it's functioning. There we go. Thank you. Otherwise, people start flashing lights and throwing things and that sort of thing. All right, chapter 5, verse 1. Naaman, don't worry about the name. He was the leader. Captain, that's what the King James says. Captain of the host of the military of the king of Syria. the Aramaic people, was a great man with his master and honorable. Because, and by the way, and then you're just blown away if you're awake. He's a pagan. And it says, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. What? You mean God is involved in things other than believers? Yeah. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. And by the way, leper in the Old Testament and New Testament, you absolutely may not read into that modern leprosy. Leprosies, I'm going to give you the best description in the modern world. Cancer, what does it mean? Multiple different kinds. Leprosy was something that showed up on the skin. You couldn't get rid of it. You were put out of because they thought it was contagious. So it was some sort of a skin problem. We don't know what it was. It wasn't bad enough where he couldn't function yet. Verse 2. And the Syrians had gone out by companies. There were raids of Syrians that had gone out and they attacked Israel. By the way, Judah in the south, Israel in the north. This takes place totally in Israel and in Syria. So they went out by companies or bands, and they brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, a little girl. And she waited on Naaman's wife. So here you have a little Jewish girl that is captured in one of these raids, taken to Syria, and she becomes someone's maid. Look at me in the eyes. How are you feeling about your life so far? This is the reason I want to talk about the story. This is a beautiful little story. I won't deal with every aspect. We continue. And she said unto her mistress, Naaman's wife, would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of this leprosy. That's her whole story, by the way. That's all she says in the story. She's one-dimensional, but very significant. And it says in one, again, one of these very flat characters, one went in and told his Lord, saying, thus and thus saith the maid that is of the land of Israel. And the king of Syria heard it. I guess they were all together. The king of Syria heard it. And the king, he said, go to. That's funny. It's weird in phrase in Hebrew. And it says, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel. And he departed and took with him. And friends, if this is anywhere close to being in reality, this is more money than you make in a year. This is more money than you make in a lifetime. This is more money than we make in a, this is a lot of money. A lot of money. 10 talents of silver, 6,000 pieces of gold, and 10 changes of raiment. So, otherwise, go see the king of Israel. Take along a payment, because everybody knows all the kings had their little prophets, but they were, look at me, prophet, P-R-I-F-I-T. They were people making money by telling the king what the king wanted to hear. And I'm not being funny here. They would kill animals, pull out the liver, cut the liver, and then read what the liver said. This was so common, there was books of this stuff found. Yes. He just assumes, I have these guys, so does the king of Israel. And he brought, Naaman brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, now, when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman, my servant, to thee, that thou mayest, I love this, that you, king, mayest recover him of his leprosy. And it came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent or tore his clothes, and said, am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me. By the way, when you're a pervert, you can only think perverted thoughts. He was thinking as a pagan king, even though he was the king in Israel, and he's thinking, this guy's trying to trap me. That's all this is about. Verse 8, and it was so, when Elisha, the man of God, had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, what in the world's happening here? Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet, not P-R-I-F-I-T, in Israel. Wait a minute. Was there a prophet in Israel, or was he simply a prophit? Look up here. Which was it? By the way, the third servant we're going to read about thought that should have been a prophet. Prophit. It should be a money-making thing. We continue. So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger, a malach. A messenger, you know, angel in the right context. In this case, it means human messenger unto him. By the way, Elisha didn't even go out to see him, saying, go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. I want to ask, anybody in this room been to the Holy Land? Okay, no one's been there. I haven't either. By the way, Ade and Linda went. Do you know what they say about the Jordan River? It's a dirty, muddy creek. Why would you want to go, you know, can you imagine a creek around here when it rains real hard and it gets muddy and ugly? Go dip in that and you'll come away. He's thinking. Oh, by the way, Elisha didn't even come out of it, didn't even come out to see him. He sent a guy out to see him. You think that was intentional? Oh, it was. That messenger is one of these many characters that show up in this story. Many characters. Well, verse 11. But Naaman was wroth or furious, and he went away and said, behold, I thought he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper. He must have seen some Pentecostal on television, thought he was going to get healed here. And then he starts thinking. And by the way, you're always in trouble when you start thinking. He says, are not Arbana and Pharsar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Well, Israel only has one real river, folks, and it's not much of a river. I would consider the Nile, not the Nile, the Jordan River, it's bigger than just a small runoff, but by the way, it's not much. Dada, have you been in the Philippines when all of these big things they have dug, these, what do you call them, for water to escape? But when it floods, those fill up, come out of the banks. That's what Jordan does. There's better rivers up north. They're clean. They're nice. Okay, we continue. So he goes on, may I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned and went away in a rage. And his servants came near. By the way, this is the second group we'll talk about. Who are these servants? Well, we know exactly as much about them as we know about this little girl. His servants came near and spake unto him and said, my father, if the prophet had bid thee do some great thing, wouldst thou not have done it? How much rather then, when he saith to thee, wash and be clean? Then went he down, dipped himself 7 times in Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh came away like unto a flesh of a little child, and he was clean. So he not only is cleansed from whatever kind of disease of the skin that he had, but he had the flesh of like a little child that is soft and everything is good. It says in verse 15, and he returned to the man of God, he and all his company, and came and stood before him and said, behold now, I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. By the way, this is a story about Naaman and God, friends, not about all the other circumstances. I know this is one of the great confessions in the Old Testament, that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now, therefore, I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant. And he, Elisha, said, as the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none. And he urged him to take it, but he did what? Why? Because every king in that era had prophets. They were there for money. They were hirelings. They were people that made a living. Elijah didn't need anything. Elijah had God. Verse 17. And Naaman said, by the way, then you get into something that I'm not going to explain tonight that's very odd. Naaman said, shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant, meaning to himself, 2 mules burden of earth. This is strange, and I'm not sure what this is about. I can guess, but it's a guess. For thy servant will henceforth, and here's the really the apex somewhat of the story, will offer neither burnt offering nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Lord. He was a man truly converted. Now he says, I want some earth from Israel. Maybe some people say to make a little place where he could offer. But he was going to be a true believer. Now, verse 18, folks, were you in Sunday school this morning? Verse 18 is Sunday school in the crosshairs. In this, the Lord pardon thy servant, Naaman, that when my master, the king of Syria, goeth into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leaneth on my hand, otherwise I have official duties as the man in charge of the military, and I have to fulfill my official duties. I'm only going to worship God, but I got to fulfill these official duties. He leans on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon. When I bow down myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon thy servant in this thing. Look at me, friends. He was in a very complicated mess. Now, pious people never have these problems because they never work outside. They want a home school, home life, home do everything where they can't get contaminated. They still get contaminated, but they think they don't. By the way, this is a hard one. He's asked, by the way, can you imagine a guy that just got saved saying, he's taking the implications thinking, oh my goodness, if I'm a believer, but I have to go into this pagan temple with the king. He's not trying to buy God off. What he's trying to say is that, okay, if I go in there, as long as I'm just doing my official duty, I'm not worshiping this false god. I think that's what he's saying. And he said unto him, this is Elisha says to Naaman, go in peace. So he departed from him a little way. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, behold, my master has spared Naaman the Syrian and not receiving at his hands that which he brought. But as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him. We're going to talk about three servants tonight. We're going to tell the whole story as quickly as I can. I want you to get the three servants, just a girl, just some ghost, and just a grifter. If you don't know what the term grifter means, Sonia, it means somebody that's always trying to make money in illegitimate ways, always on the grift, always trying to trick somebody, fool somebody. I want to say this. The guy you're looking at is far from perfect. She's not here tonight. Neither is the other woman, which doesn't come. She lives in Michigan now. Many years ago, we had a man in this church that was a World War II veteran from the United States Navy. Do you remember him? Husband and wife who sat back here? He died suddenly. Do you remember when? Maybe you don't remember when he died. He just, boom, he was gone. And then we found out he had been covering up for his wife's dementia for a decade. She was totally gone. But he was dead. Do you guys remember? Chuck? Well, Cliff, were you here at the time? Maybe you guys were gone. He was in between. What's his name? Robert Prathers, the Prathers. When Mrs. Prather died, look at me in the eyes. You see the ugly guy you're looking at? I never visited Mrs. Prather one time. Because nobody is going to accuse me of grifting off old people, which many twisted pastors do. Now, I had people visit. You can ask them. I had Stacy and Bambi visit many times her because they could go have a conversation, love her. She died within 6 months or 9 months after her husband. By the way, one guy wanted some money. He was a prophet, okay, but it was spelled the other way. Prifit. We're going to talk about Naaman and the three servants. There's actually more than three, but you'll understand. Let's pray together. Father, thank you for this time. Bless our time. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. Friends, I am not going to read any of the introductory verses. I'm just going to jump into this. Naaman is one of the great Gentile conversion stories in the Old Testament we're talking about. We have Melchizedek and Job and his three friends, obviously before Abraham. We have some after Abraham. We have people like Rahab. We have Ruth. We have the sailors in Jonah's story. We have the Ninevites. We have Ebed-Melech. One of the great stories we found and we have read tonight. Skip the verses for time. This story has many moving parts and can be told through the eyes of many characters. I admit that. When I was a young boy, by the way, I don't know about your church. Some of you grew up in church. I grew up in a church. My pastor preached on this story a lot because it's a great salvation story. He preached on the story of this. So, but here's the thing. He only told the story from God and Naaman's side. Tonight, I'm primarily focusing on servants. Because in the story of Naaman coming to faith, there's some people that play a big role. And those are the people we want to discuss tonight. All right, in your notes. We will look at Naaman's healing and conversion through three servants, kind of. There's really two servants and one group of servants. First of all, just a girl. It starts very simply. There was a guy by the name of Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, with a great man with his master. He was honorable because by him, unbelievable statement. And we could spend all night on this. The Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. I thought the Lord was only helping Christians. God is involved in everything, folks. God's purposes are bigger than you and I. They're bigger than our problems. God is involved, and he was even given deliverance to the Syrian kingdom at this time. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was, this is the kicker in the whole story, he was a leper having some sort of a skin disease. If you read the passage in Leviticus, you realize there's many different forms of this. 2 Kings 5:2, and the Syrians had come out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid. By the way, Israel is specific here. We're not talking about Judah in the south. We're talking about Israel in the north. There were still two kingdoms at this time. So a young girl, young lady, had been captured. And we find out in the latter part of the verse, she waited on Naaman's wife. She was brought back to Syria, and she became a servant to Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, so somewhere along the line, she talks to the person that she serves as a captive. Would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy. And one went in and told his Lord, somebody, we don't see, this is what I mean, so many characters, we don't know who, somebody that heard this went in and told Naaman, hey, thus and thus said the maid that is in the land of Israel. That's where the story starts with just a girl. Quickly in your notes, Naaman was a leader of the Syrian army. He was a great man. He was honorable. Strangely enough, he was a man used by God to win the battle, and actually more than one battle probably, but God used him, strangely enough. Everyone look at me. Do you recognize that God is not just interested in you? Almost every week I watch a lot of preaching and teaching and worship. Now, don't get mad at me or get mad at me. There's lots of worship out there that's more exciting than what we do. You have people, and literally, I'm not going to demonstrate, jumping up and down on platforms. I see some of them rapping. I'm not exaggerating. I saw a guy rapping this week like a rapper. And I'm like, I got a question for you. Do you know the biggest problem I have with the music? The music's all about you, and God is not as interested in you as you are. God has much bigger plans than you and me and your little problems. Our God, by the way, what's going on around the world? Do you think God is like, I don't know what I'm going to do? God is involved, friends. When I was in the military, long time ago, before my young guys over here were dreamed of, I was in the period of time from 75 to 81. We had no battles. We did nothing except anybody? Iran took our hostages. And Jimmy Carter, after forever, decided to go in and try to rescue them. Does anybody remember what happened? It was a total disaster. By the way, do you think God was in it? I think 100%. By the way, God is involved in more than you think. He's involved in everything. He has his plans, his purposes. I'm not going to read this tonight because it would take too long. We'll read Revelation at the bottom of the page. This is the one. This is future, talking about the political side of things and the religious side of things. It says in the 10 horns, which represent, most people think, some kind of reconstituted Roman Empire, which thou sawest upon the beast. This is the Antichrist. These shall hate the whore. This is the religious side of things. And shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. Sometime in the middle of this, probably in the middle of the tribulation period, God is going to use the political side to destroy the religious side and make it purely Antichrist. Verse 17. For God hath put in their hearts, by the way, pagans, to fulfill what? His will, and to agree, and give their kingdom unto the beast, until the words of God shall be fulfilled. Our God is sovereign over all things. Next page. We also know he was a mighty man of valor. And we also know, and I love this piece, because the story revolves around it, yet a leper. He had one thing he couldn't fix. Introduces a little maid. Everyone look at me for 1 second. By the way, I'm just going to try to read through the story. Can I say something to you? You say, Pastor, I'm a nobody. I can't. Would you do me a favor and quit talking to yourself? By the time the sermon's over tonight, some of you are going to like me not at all, because all of your problems, same as mine, all start in the same place. Talking to yourself and not being aware. I'm just a nobody. Here's a little girl. Just go down the list. The list is very simple. We have, first of all, Syrian raiding parties. By the way, Israel was weak, compromised, because every king had been a pagan king, even though they were generically Jewish. But Assyrian raiding parties were going out in waves, so to speak. They caught, well, there's the first mistake, Christy, and that's the one that I hadn't seen that's not done in the notes. They were caught, someone was caught up in a raid, this young girl, just a young girl. We don't know her age, but she would be probably under 12, just a young girl caught up in a raid. She's a little girl, obviously a maid. She becomes a servant of Naaman's wife. Now, everyone look at me. If you don't know the history of the Bible, this is religious language to you. When Solomon died in 931 BC, the kingdom split into Israel in the north, Judah in the south. Israel in the north survived from 931 to 722, a little over 200 years. It had 20 kings. Every king did evil in the sight of the Lord. Two of them didn't do as evil as the others. Got my point? In the south, they lasted from 931 to 586 BC. Strangely enough, they had 20 kings. Many of them lasted a lot longer. And of those, two of them were outstanding, six of them were decent, and the rest of them weren't. So they did pretty well in the south. Where's this young lady from? Everybody answer, where's the young lady from? By the way, this is the one that God said to Elijah, I have reserved 7,000 people in Israel that haven't bowed the knee, which means most people in Israel were also idolaters. But there's a little girl. What? That just got caught up. And it's like, Lord, where were you at? And you just, man, where were you at? Why, here I am in Syria. That's not thinking like that at all. A little girl, obviously a maid, became a servant of Naaman's wife. She was obviously a believer in Israel. And then there's the thing that just, it's not in the text because it's not there. She was not bitter. Do you know how people are when one thing goes wrong in their life? It's like, here's a little girl. Look at me. That was from the few believing families in the north, and her family gets caught up in the raid. She gets taken into Syria. She gets up there, and you would think she would be bitter, weaned on a dill pickle, hate everybody, everybody's bad, but no, none of that stuff. She's a believer. Maybe she thought God was in this. That would be shocked. I say in your notes, she was concerned about her captor. That's weird. And then she pointed her mistress to Elisha. You know, it would to God that, you know, that Naaman could go see Elisha. Things would be okay. God would heal him. So here's a girl, not bitter, concerned about her captor, pointed her mistress to Elisha, and the word somehow got to Naaman from an unknown source that we know nothing about, someone, and it all happened. Everyone look at me. Are you with me in the story? From just who? A pastor? Theologian? Dr. So-and-so? Just a girl. Can I say this, friend? The thing that rocks me about this story is just a girl. There's two sets of servants that we know. Do you know what's not mentioned in the story? Somebody tell me one thing. Her name. Yeah. We don't really know anything about her. We only know one thing. She is a one-dimensional person. She shows up as a believer, and she says to the mistress, you know, would God that my master could go down and see Elisha. I don't know if she mentioned his name, the prophet, and he would be healed. And that started a chain of events that's going to have unbelievable repercussions, all from one little girl. Can I say this? If you don't hear anything else tonight, just remember this. Just a girl. Just a girl. Now, guys, let me speak to my young macho guys over here. I used to be one of you younger macho guys, and I'm being dead serious. Three of you guys work outside in the secular world, as I did in those days. Guys, I think I had more impact when I was your age than I ever have since. You say, I'm just a guy. I don't know anything. It isn't about what you know. Are you available? Are you willing to stand for Christ? Are you willing to... By the way, that's how God uses people. It's always been that way. Just a girl. Well, we move on to the second part. I call it just some ghost. That's the reason I say there really weren't three servants. There were three and a group. The story continues. Well, this story then gets from the young girl encouraging the mistress to talk to the husband, who somebody then goes and talks to the husband, and somehow this gets all the way to the king of Syria. And the king of Syria said, go. And I will send a letter unto the king of Israel. And he departed and took with him a fortune, by the way, friends, 10 talents of silver, 6,000 pieces of gold, 10 changes of raiment. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, now when the letter is come unto thee, behold, I have sent therewith Naaman my servant to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy. Now, the king of Syria didn't quite get the whole story right. He's thinking the king of Israel is going to do it, or maybe he's just assuming he has some prophets with him. Well, it came to pass when the king of Israel had read the letter that he rent his clothes and said, am I a God to kill and to make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me. We start, and I had, by the way, didn't have room to put it in here. We have the king of Syria. He writes a letter. By the way, he wrote a letter. Look at me, friends. We have these letters from different kingdoms that miraculously survive, usually in stone. We have them from Egypt to, what are those people called? The Hurrians and the, there's a group of Mitanni. We have letters back and forth. They fought lots of letters, different kingdoms. But he was the big shot. He wrote a letter to the little shot saying, hey, I'm going to send this guy down here. Heal him for me, would you? That's where it starts. It's a letter to the king of Israel, and he also sent money. Now, friends, I'm going to tell you what I read in a couple places. The silver weighed 750 pounds. Not bad. By the way, I want to ask you a question. How much is gold worth right now? Anybody know? Is it under now 4,000? It was over 4,000 for a little bit. It's old, so Tom's keeping track of gold. He's invested in the gold market. By the way, I couldn't even afford to buy a ring now. When I got married back in the dark ages, I could afford to buy a gold ring. I can't even afford, by the way, an ounce of gold. By the way, the gold, according to what some people think, weighed 150 pounds. Tom, would you like to have 150 pounds of gold? I think you would be pretty good shape, right? Yeah, the silver, by the way, is not as expensive, though still a lot of money. By the way, 10 changes of garments. Of course, people didn't have a lot of clothing. A change of nobody hardly except the wealthiest of the wealthy would have 10 changes of garments. So he sends a letter, greater to the lesser, a letter to the king of Israel. He sends money. And my opinion is he sent the money for the king of Israel's hired profits, prophets, thinking that you have to pay for their duty. That's where it starts. Then we move to the king of Israel. By the way, the king of Israel has zero connection with God. Look at me, everybody. Who does he think I am, God? By the way, if he was a godly king, he could say, hey, why don't you go see Isaiah? Why don't you? He's a pagan. It's like, who do you think I am? Does he think I'm God? Because he's a, sadly, part of this 20 horrible kings in the north. He tears his clothes. He sees an impossible situation. And to make a short story long, he sees a trap. He thinks he's being trapped here. He thinks the king of Syria sent him down here to trap me and then to destroy my kingdom. That's all he can think about. Well, we continue under that with the reply of Elisha. I didn't put him in there. Verse 8. And it was so when Elisha, the man of God, had heard the king of Israel had rent his clothes or torn his clothing, a sign of mourning, that he sent to the king saying, wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes or torn thy clothing? And let him come now to me. Send him to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. By the way, the king of Israel didn't care if there was a prophet in Israel. He hated Elijah. He hated Elisha. All of the kings hated those guys. They hated these biblical prophets. Sure. So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent, what's it say? I've already told you that's the same Hebrew word as, you know, angel. It's obviously a human messenger. The word means messenger always, and then you determine from the context human or angelic. Elisha didn't even go out to see him. Sent out a messenger, says, go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. That's what Elisha does. So Elijah heard. Elijah says, send him to me. Elijah said to the king or the king's people, he's going to know that there's a prophet in Israel. Look at me. Who else is going to know? The king of Israel. But the king of Israel, can I say this? Some of us think, if you've ever read charismatic literature, people say if you could just have a healing crusade, everybody would get saved. You do realize Jesus brought people back from the dead. No. He didn't want to know any of this stuff. But by the way, that pagan from the north, Naaman, a Syrian, our Aramaic person came there, he's going to know there is a real prophet in Israel. The king would know too, but the king wasn't interested. So the strange part is he sends a messenger to Naaman, and he gives him a simple message. Go over to the Jordan. You know that muddy creek? Dip 7 times. You say, no, I'm not getting into any whys because that's not my point tonight. Dip 7 times, and I'm going to ask you, how was Naaman at that point? Happy? By the way, we're going to come back to those ghosts in a minute. The second boo-boo in your notes is Naaman. Should be underlined and that should be divided here. You see the word Naaman sticking in there all by itself. But Naaman was wroth. He was furious. What? What? And he went away and said, behold, I thought he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper. And then he starts thinking. By the way, you get in trouble when you start thinking like this. Are not Arbana and Pharpar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned and went away in a rage. And then, everyone look at me. We come now. Look. Where did it all start? Just a girl. Now, several servants. We don't know how many. And by the way, we don't know anything about them. They're one-dimensional. They do exactly one thing. I love this. This is the beautiful part of the story. I think this is on the next page. We have no names from these people. Well, they say this. I call them some ghosts, meaning they're like ghosts in the story. And his servants. How many? We don't know. Male or female? We don't know. We don't know if they were believers or not. We don't know anything. But in this man's conversion and his healing, the amazing thing is a girl got the ball rolling. Everybody else except Elijah was messing things up, even Naaman. And then some servants come and they just do something. It's very beautiful. They say this, and his servants came near and spake unto him and said, what do they say? My what? They're being highly respectful. Probably they love this guy. My father, if the prophet had bid thee do some great thing, wouldest not thou not have done it? How much rather, when he saith to thee, wash and be clean, then he went down. I just love this. Some people, we know nothing about them. It's a group of people. They have proper respect. They're at the right time in the right place. They use very much reason and common sense. And the next thing you know, verse 14, then he went down and dipped himself 7 times in Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh came away like unto the flesh of a little child. And he was clean. All right, everyone look at me. We're almost done. I'm not going to read the whole story. 3 servants. Are you guys ready? Just a what? Just a girl. Just some ghost. And I say ghost, I'm not talking about anything weird. I mean, we know nothing. We don't even know if they're believers. We know nothing. These men probably were instrumental in Naaman becoming a believer and Naaman getting healed. And we know nothing about them except they said, Father, very respectful. If he had asked you to do something great, wouldn't you have done it? Well, and then the next thing you know, Naaman says, you know, I think you're, by the way, have you ever met somebody that's coming unwound and somebody comes alongside, brings them down, says, let's think about this. Let's move forward. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Just some ghost. Well, the last part of the story is just a grifter. Again, a grifter. Everyone look at me. It's a swindler, a cheat. Somebody, look at me, always looking for something. I want to ask you a question. I began this sermon by saying, when Mr. Prather died, I never visited Mrs. Prather. Do you have any idea why? By the way, I have not talked to Lois and Frenchie outside of church. I have known pastors that prey on these kind of people. Do you know that? I've known people that prey on these kind of people too. By the way, you say that's wrong. You're not going to like me in a minute. Let's read. Just a grifter. What's his name? Gehazi. Tom, how much was that money worth, that gold? Is that a lot of money to anybody in this room? All of you have $7 million in your back pocket? Yes or no? How much is the silver worth? Do we have any idea what silver is worth these days? I probably would take it on the. And then also 10 changes of clothing. By the way, here's the problem. Elisha said, no, I will not take any of that. Why? Because God is not for sale. And he was a prophet. But here we get into the story quickly. He returned to the man of God, he and all his company, and came and stood before him. And he said, behold, what a confession. Now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now, therefore, I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant. By the way, I think he was doing this out of good intentions. But Elisha wants him to know it's not about money. Verse 16, but he said, Elijah said, as the Lord liveth before whom I stand, I will receive none. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. Now, we've read the other interim verse, verse 19. Everybody, everybody, there's just a girl, there are just some ghosts, and there's just a grifter. Where does the grift start? Where does the grift start? Read the verse, please, verse 19. He said unto him, go in peace, and so he departed from him a little way. But Gehazi, the servant, this is where I got the three servants, of Elisha, the man of God, said, everyone look at me. Who's he speaking to? Oh, he's speaking to himself. Do you know I have preached on this for the last 20 years and still can't convince half the people in this room all of your problems are the conversation you have with yourself? He starts talking to himself. There ain't nobody else there to listen. He's talking to himself. And by the way, can I say this to all of you? The moment you start talking to yourself very much, is that a good thing or a bad thing? By the way, you say, I don't like you preaching on this. Then you remove it from your Bible. It's what the text says. He starts having a conversation with himself about money. Let me just say this, friend. Any temptation you have, I don't care what the temptation is, once the conversation starts in your mind and in your soul, what do you normally do? You convince yourself. So he went, and by the way, the rest of the story gets really dirty, in my opinion, because he not only gets some money, he didn't take it all, Tom. He's not greedy. He only takes two of the things of the silver and, you know, some of the clothes. And he concocts a whole story. He tells a big old lie to, you know, saying, well, you know, there was two guys came and you could help them and blah, blah. And it's, but then he goes back to Elisha. You know what happens? Elisha is not buying that lie. I want to say this and I'm done. Everybody, we start with just a girl. Look at me, everybody. She did not have that conversation with herself of woe is me. This young lady talked about the Lord to her captors. You have some servants. We don't know who they were. I call them ghosts. Don't know anything about them. Right in the middle of the turning point of the story, they say, hey, you know what? If the prophet have asked you to do something big, you'd have done it. So why don't you do this? And he does it. He gets healed. He knows God is the only God. He gets converted. And then the third servant has a little talk. Let me just have a little talk with myself. I'm going to say this for 1 minute. I've told this story. I could tell the story much better. The worst conversation I ever had with myself was in boot camp. I've told the story many times. They put us on, what they call it, watch? Is that what they call it in the Navy? It's been a while since I've been in the Navy. They called it watch from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. And watch in boot camp was this. We were in three floors. The floor under us, nobody was at. I had to go down there for 4 hours. And somebody, by the way, it was a big room like this, empty, you know, with tables, bed, racks, two sides racks, tables in the middle. And back in the back over there was the head where, you know, showers and stuff were. There was an entrance over there, and there was an entrance someplace down here. All I remember after being, by the way, we didn't get any sleep in boot camp, and it was three hours or so into this, the dead of night. I'm exhausted, and somebody had put a chair in the corner. And every time I walked past that chair, I thought, this is what I was thinking. Well, somebody put those together. I think I can just sit in that chair in the corner, lean back in that chair, and if somebody comes in, I'll hear them. And I'll catch some sleep. Look me in the eyes. What was I doing? Look at me. Everybody, what was I doing? Talking to myself. Now, I would like to tell you that I was super invincible for all problems. I pretty much kept walking around. And I was just about convinced that I think I'm just going to take 15, pull that chair back into the corner, lean back, take a little snooze. And at that time, this direction, down this, I didn't hear anybody. I saw this. slow. I was just standing looking. It was my company commander smoking his cigarette back down there, waiting to see if I was sleeping. Look me in the eyes. I'm going to say this. I'm trying to be kind. You're going to talk yourself into all kinds of foolishness. You need to shut up talking to yourself. Your problem is way too much talking to you. And you don't realize you're talking. You don't have the ability at this stage to control it. Because, by the way, the battle is won or lost inside. I'm going to read a verse and be done. It's not in the notes. When Elijah corners him and talks to him later. By the way, Gehazi ends up getting what? He gets the very leprosy that Naaman had, yes. But the story that I like is this. In verse 26, you know, Elijah says, I knew exactly what you were doing, Gehazi. And he said unto him, went not my heart with thee when the man turned again from his chariot to meet thee? He asked this question, is it a time to receive money and to receive garments and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen and men servants and maid servants? And the answer was, you should have been having a different conversation with yourself. Now, guess what? You have leprosy. You know what my point of the sermon is tonight? Are you just a girl? If you're just a girl, God can use you in all kinds of amazing ways. You say, I'm just a ghost. I am a nobody. Some nobodies turned the whole story. Some nobodies, the reason he got saved. Or you can be the person, you're 50, 60, 70 years old, you're still talking to yourself, all of this nonsense, you cannot control what goes on inside, and you talk yourself in. By the way, every problem that we have in this church right now is the conversation you have in your heart. Because all sin starts, doesn't start out there, it starts in here. I don't want to go to this party. I shouldn't go to this party, but you're already dead. Let's stand, please. Pastor Warren, I'm a nobody. Can I say this? Two sets of nobodies did quite a bit in this story. Just a girl and just some ghost. If a little girl can talk to people about the Lord, that means probably I can. And if just some ghosts that we know nothing about can reason with somebody, I think we can. I trust we're not Gehazi. Father, thank you for this time. Bless our time together. May this be a profitable night in Christ's name. Amen.